evaluation of God's army. After the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, the Lord said, "The abatement of the great burden of the earth has now been effected with the help of Drona, Bhishma, Arjuna, and Bhima. But what is this? There is still the great strength of the Jodha dynasty born of myself, which may be a more unbearable burden." Please repeat after me. After the end of the battle of Kurukshetra,
The Lord said,
"The abatement of the great burden of the earth
has
now been effected with the help of Drona,
Bhishma,
Arjuna and Bhima. But what is this?
There
is still the great strength
of the Jodha dynasty,
born of myself,
which may be a more
unbearable
burden.
For God, it is a wrong theory that due to an increase in population, the world becomes overburdened, and therefore there are wars and other annihilating processes. The earth is never overburdened. The heaviest mountains and ocean on the face of the earth hold more living entities than there are human beings, and they are not overburdened. If a census were taken of all the living beings on the surface of the earth, certainly it would be found that the number of human beings is not even 5% of the total number of living beings. If the birth rate of human being is increasing, then the birth rate of other living beings is increasing proportionately. The birth rate of lower animals, beasts, aquatics, birds, etc., is far greater than that of human beings. There is an adequate arrangement for food for all the living beings all over the earth by the order of the Supreme Lord. And He can arrange more and more if there is actually a disproportionate increase of living beings. Therefore, there is no question of an increase in population causing a burden. The earth became overburdened due to the dharmaglani or irregular discharge of the Lord's desire. The Lord appeared on the earth to curb the increase of miscreants and not the increase in population, as is wrongly put forward by the mundane economist. When Lord Krishna appeared, there had been a sufficient increase in miscreants who had violated the desire of the Lord. The material creation is meant for fulfilling the desire of the Lord, and His desire is that the conditioned souls who are unfit to enter into the kingdom of God have to have a chance to improve their conditions for entering. The entire process of cosmic arrangement is intended just to give a chance to the conditioned living souls to enter the kingdom of God. And there is an adequate arrangement for the maintenance of the nature, maintenance by the nature of the Lord. Therefore, although there may be a great increase in population on the surface of the earth, if the people are exactly in line with God consciousness and are not miscreants, such a burden on the earth is a source of pleasure for Lord. Such a burden on the earth is a source of pleasure for her. There are two kinds of burdens. There is a burden of the beast and the burden of love. The burden of the beast is unbearable, but the burden of love is a source of pleasure. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti describes the burden of love very practically. He says that the burden of the husband on the young wife, the burden of the child on the lap of the mother, and the burden of wealth on the businessman
although actually burdens from the viewpoint of heaviness, are sources of pleasure. And in the absence of such burdensome objects, one may feel the burden of separation, which is heavier to bear than the actual burden of love. When Lord Krishna referred to the burden of the Jodhpur dynasty on the earth, he referred to something different than the burden of the beast. The large numbers of family members born of Lord Krishna counted to some millions and were certainly a great increase in the population of the earth. But because all of them were expansions of the Lord Himself, by his transcendental plenary expansion, they were a source of great pleasure for the earth. When the Lord referred to them in connection with the burden of the earth, he had in mind their imminent disappearance from the earth. All the members of the family of Lord Krishna were incarnations of different demigods, and they were to disappear from the surface of the earth along with the Lord. When he referred to the unbearable heaviness on the earth in connection with the Jodhpur dynasty, he was referring to the burden of the separation. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms this. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms this inference. Kiyan uboyayam khopitoru shapitoru bharo jadrona bhishmar juna bhima mudai ashtadashaksho hiniko madamsham madamshoi aste balam budu vishaham yaduna. So, in the first word, Srila Prabhupada is saying that the Lord appears to annihilate the miscreants and to support or to give shelter or to give protection to his devotees. That is the reason why the Lord appears, mainly as the Yugavata. The Lord appears to establish the Yuga Dharma, and the Yuga Dharma is practiced by the people, those who are pious, those who are Krishna conscious. But those who are not Krishna conscious, they reject the Yuga Dharma and they become miscreants. They become offenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in order to establish Dharma, Krishna arranged the Lord. In order to establish Dharma, Krishna arranged for the battle of Kurukshetra. And in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna made arrangements to annihilate the miscreants. Here he is saying, Jat Drona Bhishma Arjuna Bhima Mulai. Krishna annihilated the miscreants through his devotees. And Krishna mentioned the names of Dronacharya, Bhishma, Arjuna, Bhima, etc. They were actually his devotees. And through them, Krishna made arrangements to annihilate his miscreants. That was the battle of Kurukshetra. But then Krishna considered that although the Kshatriyas, the miscreant Kshatriyas have been annihilated, but still they are the Jadus. And these Jadus are very, very powerful people, because they are Krishna's family members. They are actually Krishna's expansions. The Jadus are actually Narayans from different Vaikuntha planets. In order to take part in Krishna's pastimes, they came down to this earth planet. That is one part of the Jadus, and there is also another section of the Jadus. Those who are the demigods, those who became qualified to go back to Godhead. When Krishna comes, Krishna brings his associate into this earth planet, or wherever he performs his pastimes. Krishna brings the associates from Vaikuntha Loka or Vrindavan onto this earth planet. And also, the people, those who are devoted to Krishna, those who are making advancement, they are gradually making advancement. And they also get a chance to take part in Krishna's pastimes. And thus, they become free from whatever little material contaminations they have. They become purified of those material contaminations by participating in Krishna's pastimes. And then they become fully qualified to go back to Krishna. Now, many of the Jodus are actually the demigods. We remember when Brahma went to appeal to the Lord on the bank of the Kshiradoshai, on the bank of the Nil ocean, and he prayed to Kshiradoshai Vishnu to deliver the earth planet from the burden of sinful people, those who are tormenting the Mother Earth. And at that time what happened? That time, although the Lord did not appear personally, but he instructed Brahma in his heart, and he assured Brahma that very soon you will be coming, you will be descending on the earth planet. And he also told Brahma to inform all the demigods to take birth in different Jodu families and Vrishni families. So many of the Jodus and Vrishnis were actually demigods. They were born in the family, they participated in Krishna's pastimes, and thus they become qualified to enter into the spiritual sky. Now, when Krishna was about to leave this planet, Krishna considered that these people are still here. And Krishna didn't want to take a chance. That has been explained in the 12th canto. Krishna felt that these people are actually very, very powerful. And no one actually can control them. No one can destroy, no one can kill them. Because since they are Krishna's plenary expansions, since they are Krishna's devotees, they are very, very powerful. And no one actually can kill them. So Krishna wanted to take care. Krishna wanted to send them back to Godhead before he left this planet. So this is one consideration. But in this purport, Prabhupada is pointing out another consideration presented by Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. That's about the Durvishaham, about the word Durvishaham Bharam. Durvishaham means unbearable. So heavy that no one can bear that. And Bharam means burden. Now here apparently it seems that these Jodus were actually a burden on the earth planet. Kugoi on this earth planet. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur pointed out that no, these Jodus are not actually a burden like that. Like the burden of a beast or burden that is unbearable or unpleasant. This burden to earth was actually a very nice burden. Like the burden of a child on the lap of a mother. Like the child also is a burden to the mother. But to the mother, the burden is a pleasure. The same way the burden of a lover is actually a pleasure to the beloved. So if this Jodhus were a burden of that kind, it was not an unpleasant burden, but a pleasant burden. And when the Mother Earth carries that kind of burden, the burden of the devotees, the burden of love, then Mother Earth becomes very happy. It has been described, like when the devotees dance, in Krishna consciousness with the chant of the holy name, when the devotees dance, with every step of the devotee, Mother Earth becomes ecstatic. Mother Earth feels very happy, and her body becomes the hairs on her body stand up in ecstasy. So that is how Mother Earth feels when the devotees grace her with their presence. So that is a burden of love for Mother Earth. The Jodhus were not a burden of trouble, a burden of distress. But the Jodhus, the members of the Jodhu family, the devotees, the pure devotees of Krishna, were actually pleasure to Mother Earth. But Krishna felt that actually Krishna wanted them to go back before he left. Because they came just to take part in his pastimes. And now that he was winding up his pastimes, Krishna decided to send them back to God. And how he did it, I'm sure everybody knows how Krishna sent the Jodhus back. Actually, no one could destroy the Jodhus, or no one could kill the Jodhus, because they are beyond karmic reaction. Since they are spiritually situated, no karma can affect them. So Jodhus were beyond karmic reaction. So there was no way to send them back to Godhead. So how Krishna made arrangements for them to go back to Godhead? Krishna made them commit Vaishnava Aparadha. And due to the Vaishnava Aparadha, they had to leave this planet. They were cursed by the Vaishnavas, great sages like Narada Muni. And what was their offense? One day the Jadus were playing, and they drank the rice wine. They are actually the Kshatriyas. They are royal. They are the fans, the members of the royal family. So they can drink. So Jadus were drinking one day on the bank of the ocean and in Dwarka. And at that time, some great sages appeared there. And so the Jadus wanted to make some fun of the sages. And they dressed Samba as a woman, clad him in a sari, and they held the mace, and Samba was holding the mace on his abdomen. The mace is round. You can see that the mace is a round-headed object. And so Samba was holding the mace on his abdomen, and he was dressed like a woman. And the members of the Jodhu, Krishna's sons and Krishna's grandsons, they approached the sages and asked them, "Can you please tell whether this pregnant woman is bearing a son or a daughter in her womb?" So they wanted to know whether he was whether he is going to give birth to a son or a daughter. Because the sages are known for their clairvoyance. They can see the past, present and the future. So the sages, they got a little offended. And they said, "Well, we do not know whether he is going to give birth to a son or a daughter. But at least we can say one thing, that whoever he is carrying in his womb is going to be the cause of the destruction of your entire Jodhu dynasty." So that was the curse given by the sages. And so when they got to know, when the news reached Krishna and Balaram. Balaram actually got very worried. All the elder members got very worried. And so then they decided to neutralize the curse. Better destroy that mess. And what they did, Balaram instructed to rub the mess on a stone. So they were rubbing the mess. The mess was made of solid iron. The people of those days were so powerful that they would fight with a mess which is made of solid iron. And they would fight with that. It used to be a very heavy object. It must be about 100,000 kilos. Maybe even more, because the people were also very big though. So the Balaram instructed them to rub the mess on the stone. And so by rubbing, they made it into a... They powdered it, made a powder out of it. And actually, I made a mistake. They didn't approach the sages after drinking. They were, at that time, they were quite sane. Drinking or party came later on. So then the whole mess was rubbed into powder on the bank of a river. And that powdery substance, the powdered iron particles, was floating on the river, and those iron particles grew into some kind of stick that grows by the river. It's called shore. There is no English name for that. It's a kind of wheat that grows. It's about this thick. And it's very soft. Very, very soft. And it's all straight. And they grow usually by water. In Australia, they grow something like that. They get something like that. It's a long kind of plant. Anyway, it's something like, you can say, somewhat like sugarcane. Somewhat like sugarcane. Of course, sugarcane is much harder and it's juicy. And sugarcane has the leaves on top. But this has the leaf from the bottom also. And then you take the leaves off, and in the middle you find a soft, stick-like substance. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, one day, the Jadus went out for a picnic on the bank of the river, Saroju. And there, in the picnic, they drank rice wine. And then they got intoxicated. And then they picked up those sword sticks from the bank of the river. And they began to fight with each other with those sticks. And apparently, these sticks are very soft. It's like paper. Very, very soft. Like, if you just... So it's very soft. You have seen jute sticks, but it's even softer than jute sticks. So, but by Krishna's arrangements, those sticks became like iron. And then they fought, and then they killed each other. So this is how the whole Jodhu dynasty was destroyed. Now anybody who has the understanding, who has the proper understanding, will know that it was actually Krishna's arrangements. It was simply Krishna's arrangements. It's not that they are cursed and that's why they are killed and the Jadu dynasty was destroyed. But this was just an arrangement by Krishna. Because Krishna wanted to point out how
dangerous Vaishnava Apradha is, how dangerous the offense of the Vaishnava is, Krishna made it clear. Krishna pointed out through this pastime that even Krishna's own family members were destroyed by this offense to the Vaishnava. But the devotee will also understand that of course he should not commit Vaishnava apradha, so this is a warning to him. But he also knows that this is actually Krishna's arrangement. Krishna wanted the Jodhis to go back. So that's why Krishna made this arrangement. Otherwise, when nobody can kill the Jodhis, how they could have been killed just by some by fighting with each other with some soft, papery sticks. Like, Jodhis were so powerful that even wood couldn't do, even iron rod couldn't do anything to them. They were so powerful. First of all, they were Kshatriyas. And then secondly, they were extremely powerful Kshatriyas. And then thirdly, they were Krishna's plenary extensions. We have seen in Mahabharata that Kshatriyas were so powerful that even if their bodies were torn into pieces by arrows, still they did not stop fighting. And it has been said that the Kshatriyas are so powerful that if the right hand is cut off, then the Kshatriya fights with his left hand. If the left hand is cut off, if both the hands are cut off, then the Kshatriya fights with his legs. And if his legs are cut off, then the Kshatriya rolls on the ground and fights, still as long as he has his spirit in the body, soul in the body, life in the body. So that is how powerful the Kshatriya is. So this we are talking about ordinary Kshatriya. So what to talk about Kshatriyas like the Jodhis, Krishna's family members? They are not ordinary Kshatriyas. So how can they die just out of a fight with soft little sticks? Like, can you imagine if somebody beats you with that twig of the tree? Will that do anything to you? Nothing. But these short sticks are even softer than that. So how can the Jodhis die out of their fight? So it is only Krishna's arrangement. So when Krishna withdrew his pastime, he withdrew it like that. Like, Krishna comes to increase the faith of his devotees and makes the offenders, more offensive or atheistic people, more averse to him. That is the purpose of Krishna's pastimes. Like, when Krishna performs pastimes, the devotees become very enlivened, considering, oh, how wonderful it is. But the non-devotees, they do not believe. They say that, well, Krishna is just an ordinary human. What's so great about Krishna? Krishna cannot do anything of that sort. Like, when Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill when he was only about 6 years old, and that also he lifted on the little finger of his left hand. And the devotees became, when devotees hear about that pastimes of Krishna, they become very, very excited. They think, oh, how wonderful Krishna's pastimes are. And Krishna, although he was just a little boy, he lifted the Govardhan hill and held it for 7 days. But when Kamsa heard these pastimes of Krishna, what did Kamsa think? Kamsa said, how is it possible for a small little child to lift a hill? It is impossible. Most probably he lifted one mushroom. His followers, or the people, those who are attached to him, they are so blind with their affection
They exaggerated it and said that he lifted Govardhan. So this is the difference between a devotee and a demon. Devotees always believe everything that Krishna does. But a demon, they can never understand and they can never believe. It's inconceivable pastime. So when the devotees hear about these pastimes, how the Jadus left this planet, they will say, oh, how wonderful Krishna's pastimes are. They were Krishna's family members, and Krishna just made arrangements for them to go back to Godhead before he left. But the non-devotees, how what they think, see, they say that the Jadus are Krishna, so powerful and this and that. They are actually so weak that they fought with some soft sticks and they died by that fight, due to them, during that fight. And see, how what they think, they said that the Jadus are Krishna, so powerful and this and that. They're actually so weak that they fought with some soft sticks and they died by that fight, due to them, during that fight. And see, they are actually such ordinary living entities that some sages cursed them, and due to the curse, they all died. Same thing also applies to Krishna's pastimes. As I told you, that Balaram told them to rub the mess, and the entire mess practically was rubbed into powder. But the end of the thing couldn't be rubbed off, right? Because while you are rubbing, it comes to the end, you cannot hold it anymore. So it becomes a thin slice of metal. So that thin slice of metal was still existing. And one hunter found that metal piece, which is like a triangle. And with that metal, he made an arrow. And when Krishna was lying, this hunter mistook Krishna's lotus feet to be an animal, which was faint in color, very beautiful looking. And the hunter couldn't understand that this was actually the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna is lying, so he shoot an arrow made of that metal piece of leftover from a mess. And that pierced Krishna's toe, and Krishna left this planet. So how does the devotee feel when he hears that? Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who killed Putana when he was only 3 days old, Krishna, who lifted Govardhan Hill, Krishna, who killed big demons like Trinavarta, Sur, Abhasur, Bakasur, who killed King Hamsa and Jarasa, so many demons, big demons. That Krishna, he died just because a small little arrow pierced his toe. Not even his chest pierced his toe. Will any ordinary human being die if his toe is pierced by an arrow? Even an ordinary human, we won't die if our toes are pierced by an arrow. So what to talk about Krishna, who is such a powerful personality, the Supreme Person. The devotees think that this is, devotees relish Krishna's pastimes, understanding how Krishna's pastimes are sheer arrangements of Jogamaya. Krishna's pastimes are simply there, and Krishna performs his pastimes simply to increase the love of his devotees for him. And they're inconceivable. Krishna never left this planet because he died out of being pierced by the arrow. Jadus did not die
because they fought with the sharp sticks. Yadus did not die because they were cursed by the Vaishnavas. Yadus were actually very, very elevated Vaishnavas. The ones, those who cursed them, Yadus were even more powerful than them, more elevated Vaishnavas than them. So if a lower Vaishnava cursed a superior Vaishnava, the curse doesn't take place. So the sages, the curse of the sages could not cause the destruction of the Yadu family. So as devotees we understand that it is simply Krishna's arrangement. When Krishna wants to do something, he can do it any way he likes to do it. Krishna can make, what to talk about Krishna, even Krishna's devotees can make a dumb man speak and a lame man cross the mountains. Mukam karoti vachal pangum lankarati. That is the potency of Krishna's devotees. What to talk about Krishna's potency? Krishna can do anything that he wants to do. If Krishna wants, Krishna can make an ant hold the entire earth. And if Krishna wants, he can make the most powerful man become totally helpless. So that is how Krishna retains his supreme inconceivable potency. So as a devotee we must understand that these are simply Krishna's pastimes, and by understanding these pastimes of Krishna, we appreciate Krishna's inconceivable potency, and thus we become more and more dependent on Krishna. If Krishna wants, Krishna can save us from any dangerous situation. And if Krishna wants, he can destroy us without taking any help of any material object. If Krishna wants, Krishna can save us, even in spite of a big atomic nuclear war. If Krishna wants, he can save us. Krishna can neutralize the potency of the atom bombs and nuclear weapons. What to talk about nuclear weapons? Krishna actually neutralized the effect of Sudarshan Chakra. Effect of Brahmastra by his Sudarshan Chakra. When Parikshit Maharaj was in the womb of his mother, Ashwatthama released Brahmastra. And Brahmastra actually is 100,000 times, or what, inconceivable, more powerful than atom bombs. Brahmastra is so powerful. The atom bomb is actually Agnyastra, fire weapon. Atom bombs or nuclear weapons are actually fire weapons. It is a fiery weapon. Of course, this fire is subtle fire, produced out of nuclear fusion and fission, atomic fusion and fission. But this is fire. A tremendous heat is produced, so it's a fiery weapon. But beyond fire is air and ether, and then beyond ether is mind, intelligence and false ego, and beyond that is Mahatattva, and beyond that is Brahma. The spiritual potency. And the Brahmastra is made out of the substance. That substance. So it is unlimitedly more, inconceivably more powerful than nuclear weapons. But Krishna could save Parikshit Maharaj from this Brahmastra. But, so why should we be afraid of some atomic warriors? If Krishna wants, Krishna can save us even from atomic war. But if Krishna wants to death comes in so many inconceivable ways. Now the case of Shiva Maharaj was telling me about the case of Sarsam in
Scotland,
Edinburgh,
there is a man who is becoming a, who is coming to the Krishna, coming to the Krishna, coming to Krishna.
You told me about him?
The man was becoming very friendly, very favorable to Krishna consciousness, but still he is not fully becoming a devotee. And he has a peculiar history. That man is the misfortune personified. He was doing a very good job. He had a very good job. And then all of a sudden, one day, his boss told him that they didn't need him. And so he lost his job. Then his girlfriend, who he was deeply in love with, his girlfriend left him. Then he was actually very fond of his mother. So he presented his mother with a big TV set. And his mother was old. So his mother was trying to operate the TV set. It was set up above. And the TV set fell on her. And the television set fell on her and she died. Then he fell in love with another girl, and they were about to get married, and the girl and him went to a restaurant, and a piece of bread got stuck in her throat. It was incredible. I was thinking of writing an article on this. So, actually, and Krishna is the supreme controller, and we can die, anything can happen according to Krishna's desire. So, the best thing is to become completely dependent on Krishna. We should depend on anything else. But Krishna. And if we depend on Krishna, then we don't have to worry about him. If death comes, then we'll say, well, now Krishna wants us to die. So let me get ready to live this body. That is how a devotee feels. And now that we are aligned, let us become a devotee of Krishna and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. That is the life of a devotee, or that is the mood of a devotee. And actually, devotee is not afraid of death. When we become devotees of Krishna, we get to realize that our actual identity is that, our original identity, we are spirit souls. We are not this body. And the spirit soul never dies. The spirit soul simply changes one body to another body. From one body to another. And apparently we can see that we all are disgusted with this present body. I think most of the devotees especially, so often I hear them say, oh, this body is so terrible. This body is such an unwanted burden. So when a devotee develops this mood, develops this feeling, so when the body becomes uninhabitable for the soul, when the body becomes totally weak and devastated by disease and all kinds of onslaughts of material nature, then I'm sure you'd feel a great relief, or rather we'll feel great relief when the time comes to leave this body. Oh, now the time has come to get rid of this terrible burden. As it is dilapidated. As it is old and falling apart. So why should we be so attached? Now let me just leave it. So that is how a devotee feels. And Dhruva Maharaj, when he left his body, death approached him actually. Death came to him. But what did Dhruva Maharaj do? When Dhruva Maharaj left his body, when his time came to go back to Godhead, the chariot came from Vaikuntha. And at the same time, death also approached him. But what did Dhruva Maharaj do? He just stepped onto the head of death. And that's how he stepped into the chariot. He stepped on to death's head, and death was very happy. Oh, a pure devotee blessed me by putting his feet on my head. So death will approach even the devotees. It is not that now that you have become devotees, you will die. No, we will die. Death will approach us. But we'll say, my dear death, please don't mind. I am using your head as a stepping stone to the chariot to Vaikuntha. So saying that, we'll just step onto death's head and climb into the chariot. So this is how a devotee conquers death. And he's never afraid of death. Because he has taken care of he has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is feared, personified, even to death. Jad Vibheti Swayam Bhayam. Even death is afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to talk about the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Death is even afraid of his devotees. Death is afraid of Krishna's devotees. When the Vishnu Dutas come, death becomes very afraid and run away from there. Because they cannot stand the glaring effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to talk about the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Death is even afraid of his devotees. Death is afraid of Krishna's devotees. When the Vishnu Dutas come, death becomes very afraid and run away from there. Because they cannot stand the glaring effulgence of the Vishnu or the devotees of the Lord. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question?
I have a question, but it's a little out of the subject, you know.
Yes.
I heard that you said that during the night when the living entity sleeps, there is this Shushupti stage of deep sleep. So what I heard is that the living entity actually enters for a short period of time into Brahmin. Is this correct?
Well, Shushupti and the region of Brahma are very close by. But they are different. Shushupti is the region of ignorance. Although it's very close to Brahma, but one is not aware of himself or the spiritual nature. But when one is situated in Brahma Jyoti, then he is aware of the spiritual energy. And he identifies himself as that energy. So that is the difference. Shushupti is in absolute ignorance. Whereas Brahma Jyoti has some consciousness. Although, imperfect spiritual consciousness. But still it is kind of spiritual consciousness. The Shushupti is total inactive state of the spirit. The spirit soul is active because the spirit soul, because of its involvement in the material nature, became active in the material plane. Right? He became very conscious of the material nature. But when he falls asleep, then he enters into an unconscious state. And that unconscious state also has a subtle consciousness. That is a dream state. Mm-hmm. Although the physical body, gross body is not active, but still the subtle body is active. Right? So that is the dream stage. But when one crosses the dream stage also and becomes totally inactive, then he is situated in the spiritual identity. You know, no more material consciousness. He is very close to his spirit soul, but he is ignorant. So that is Sushumna. But if he can go beyond that stage and become aware of his spiritual identity, that will be the state of Brahma realization.
So it is not. Usually the gross body and also the subtle body, they are the cause of our ignorance. But when we are crossing the dream stage also and become closer to the spirit soul's platform, then we can be completely ignorant.
Yeah, that's true. Because, so gross body is inactive, one is sleeping, right? Then one is dreaming. Mind is active. And that is the dream state, subtle body is active. But even then, even if the subtle body is not acting as such, but still the false ego, the covering of false ego is there. And because of the covering of false ego, one is not aware of his original identity as a servant of the Lord. And that's why he cannot enter into the spiritual life. But when he gets rid of the So, in order to get out of this material nature, we have to get rid of our false ego. Right? And the false ego means, you know, considering ourselves to be the Lord and Master. So, how do we get rid of false ego? By becoming a servant of the Lord. So, devotion is the only way by which we can go back to the spiritual nature, not otherwise. So, we have to go through the barrier of false ego. By recognizing ourselves as the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any other comments? Any other question?
Hare Krishna. Just very
yeah.
I was wondering about the significance of wearing a Brahmin thread. Is this just traditional? Is there any significance behind it?
It's called Jogva Upavita. You see, when one is initiated, then initiation takes place through a fire sacrifice. And the potency of the fire sacrifice is retained in the threads, and we wear the thread as a symbolically retaining the strength of the sacrifice, and that strength also is manifest in the form of the Gayatri Mantra. So that is the significance of Jogva.
What would be the proper way to when change the Brahma on Ekadashi? What is actually proper way to do that?
Not only on Ekadashi. We should change the thread when the previous thread is worn out. Not otherwise. Not just change it. We have to understand that very mercifully the thread has come to us, become manifest to us. And it's not up to us to throw him away whenever we feel like that. But when the thread gets worn out, then we do that. How we do that? Then we put on another thread, new thread, and wrap it together around our tongue, together, and chant the Gayatri, full Gayatri. And then we take out the thread by breaking it. Then the old thread, you break it, you should have it together, you should break it, and then throw it in a holy river. Then I would suggest you keep it. So whenever every year devotees are going to Maya. So then give it to him to throw in the game.
It is not true that we should change the Brahma prayer every Ekadashi.
I never found it. On the other hand, I was told that we must consider it to be very sacred. Because if you consider it to be just a thread, costing a few shillings, not even a few shillings, a few paisa, then it is a material consideration. It is actually spiritual.
And when Krishna heals, he does it through his additional expansion. So as that Krishna evolves, Krishna knows that he will do.
Yeah. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality. And all the incarnations are his parts and parts of the parts. Right? So when Krishna comes, all the incarnations also appear in Krishna's body. When Krishna comes to perform his pastimes, all different incarnations, all the incarnations of Krishna from the Vaikuntha planet come with Krishna in the same body. Now Krishna is actually Lila Purushottam, the supreme enjoyer. Krishna's business is simply to enjoy with his devotees. But killing the demons and all, they are not Krishna's job. Killing the demons are the job of Mahavishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Vishnu's business. So the Vishnu that is present in Krishna's body kills the demons. Krishna doesn't kill the demons. Is it clear?
He doesn't by expanding himself first.
No. It is Krishna has different potencies. Right? And in Krishna's body Vishnus are there. But Krishna by nature, he is not interested in killing demons. You know, he simply stays in Vrindavan and performs his pastimes with his friends and devotees. That's Krishna's business. But when the demons come, then the Vishnus that are present in Krishna's body, they kill the demons. Not that Krishna actually, this is actually inconceivable. We have to understand that they are in Krishna's body and they are killing the demons, not Krishna. It's explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhubhar haro nahi Krishna karo. It's not Krishna's business to deliver the earth from the body. That is the business of Shiradakshaya Vishnu. So Shiradakshaya Vishnu of reducing the burden of God.
Vishnu dynasty, the members of the Yadav and Vishnu dynasty, did they have spiritual bodies?
We have to understand this.
Because I read in Mahabharata when Krishna gave his soldiers to Duryodhana, they were also king.
Yeah. Yeah. Here I mentioned that all this killing takes place by Krishna's will. Mm-hmm. If Krishna wants, he can make the Jadus or Narayani Shenas go back to God. These are the soldiers of Narayan. They are not Narayan themselves. The soldiers of Narayan. The army of Narayan. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.